This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bean Cooley, sitting in for Terry Gross. Ellen DeGeneres just recorded a new stand-up comedy concert at the Beacon Theater in New York for an HBO special which will premiere next month. DeGeneres made history when she played the first openly gay leading character in a TV series. When her character, Ellen Morgan, came out in the fourth season of her sitcom Ellen in 1997, DeGeneres came out too. That year, she won a Peabody Award and an Emmy. But the ratings went down after Ellen came out, and the show was canceled the following year. A subsequent series, The Ellen Show, appeared on CBS with her once again playing a gay character. It lasted one season. Terry spoke with Ellen DeGeneres in 2002 after an earlier HBO special. Although Ellen was already out, most of her act had nothing to do with sexual orientation. But she did have some thoughts on the topic.
Very interesting. We have this huge debate going on right now about same-sex marriage. There are people who are against it. There are people who are for it. And the people who are against it, some people say marriage is a union between a man and a woman, and it's always been that way, and it should always remain that way. If we change it and it's between two people of the same sex, then what's next? Someone could marry an animal. That's where they go to right away. These people scare me, and they think we're weird. A goat. I really don't. I can't imagine marrying a goat. I can't even imagine dating a goat. Getting to the point that you're that serious to make that kind of commitment. That clear you'd live together for a little while to figure it out and see if you're compatible, but I would think that would be a tough day, even for the most liberal parents, the day you bring the goat home. Yes. Mom? Dad? This is Billy? We are in love.
Ellen DeGeneres, welcome back to Fresh Air. Now, here's something I used to wonder about. When you were doing stand-up before you came out, I wondered if there was material that you would have included in your performances, but that you didn't include because you weren't out. So it was the kind of observation you couldn't really talk about. So this is a double question. I'm wondering if that was the case then, and if you're including more of that type of observation now.
No, nothing's changed, and I think that was my huge concern when I did this last tour, the beginning 2 years ago for my HBO special. I thought I'm probably going to have, just about an entire audience of homosexuals instead of what I used to have, which was a lot of homosexuals, but it was a mix. It was a lot of everybody, because my humor was always just basic. It wasn't even female humor necessarily. It was just observations and weird stories, and there was nothing that I thought, if I was only out, I could talk about, how girls are together. Or I just never, was going to do that anyway, and I still don't do it. None of my humor has changed, and I think anybody who saw the beginning, there's really nothing that's, except for being honest about the fact that I'm gay, nothing really has changed as far as what I find funny.
Do you feel in a way pulled in two different directions at once? On the one hand, being like gay role model, and on the other hand, not wanting to make a big deal about it?
Yeah, it's, I'm not a political person, I'm not an activist, and I kind of got sucked into that role just, by being honest about, my sexuality. I didn't do it for any other reason other than I got tired of, in interviews, having to dodge around that question. And it wasn't something that I felt like hiding anymore or feeling ashamed of. And I really didn't even think I was ashamed of it, but I thought, well, how can I not be ashamed of it? If I can't, just come out and say it, there's got to be some shame attached to it. Yeah, it's really hard, and I don't think that I'm a gay role model either. I think that I'm a gay person, and I certainly don't represent every gay person. I just represent me, and if other people feel that... But I think visibility is important. I think representation is important for everyone, and it's got nothing to do with sexuality. It's just someone else to relate to, and so I think it's important, but I certainly don't think I'm a role model.
So how did you decide that you wanted to come out at the same time that your character did, that would happen simultaneously?
Well, I thought it'd be really embarrassing if my character came out and I didn't. I thought that would be really tough. Why do you have to go and do that? Now I've got to come out. I don't know. I was just going to do it for me, and then I thought, you know, what's the big deal if I do it? And the show is kind of floundering and struggling to find its identity, and it seemed like the character was gay anyway, because I never dated on the show, and it was always just, you know, this, every other show, any single woman, the whole show is about finding the right guy, and I just thought it would be interesting, and we just thought we'd do it at the same time, and I'm really proud of that last season. I thought it was great.
What were the script writing sessions like for the coming out episode in which, you know, you and the writers tried to figure out, I assume you were in on those sessions, tried to figure out what the right storyline would be?
Yeah, it's all kind of a blur to me. I used to write every single night. Once we got the go-ahead, we really didn't have much time because Disney didn't let us know until the last minute. They knew all season long because we were trying to build up slowly and do clues, and we really didn't want it to leak out. We just thought we would have the audience watching from the beginning of the season, and these little clues would happen, and they would be like, are they doing what I think they're doing? That's what we wanted to happen, and then it just be the episode where I came out. But unfortunately, it leaked out, and then we still didn't have the go-ahead from Disney, even after it leaked out. And I think we had one script that went in, and then it wasn't right, and then we got together and all did it again, and it was fantastic. And then we all won an Emmy for it. It was very exciting.
Can you give me an idea of a script line that you threw out that you thought, this isn't right, this isn't the way to do it?
I don't know. We just we've kind of came up with the right storyline with the ex-boyfriend coming in town and this guy that I was just crazy about and seeing him again. And that would be the tip-off that it just, something was missing. But we wanted to make it where the character really was completely in denial. You know, she just didn't know she was gay.
And then there was the question of how to handle the first kiss.
Yeah.
Which was part of the script line.
But that wasn't on the coming out episode.
Was that later?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we couldn't kiss. No, that, I mean, the coming out episode was just basically me saying, you know, that I was gay. But the first kiss was the next season. And it was a huge, huge thing. I mean, it was a problem, you know, and there was a advisory label and, you know, all that.
What did the advisory label say?
I don't know. It was shocking to me because I didn't know. I was just at home watching the show one night, and all of a sudden, you know, it was almost like there was some kind of nuclear war happening. It was just, you know, caution, the contents of this show, or, you know, it was just like this. The first time it happened, it was because we were holding hands. We held hands. And because I was looking for what it was. I mean, there are these shows like on Right Before Me and Right After Me where people that aren't married are having sex, and there's a, you know, sexual, you know, connotation to every single thing out of everyone's mouth. And, you know, that's okay. It's okay for, you know, people with kids to watch, you know, people having sex, and no matter how old you are and everything being, but you can't hold hands. That was just so shocking to me.
You really went from one extreme to the other when you came out, because you'd been in the closet. And then when you came out, not only you came out, but your character, Ellen, came out. And you were on the cover of Time magazine. And to top it off, you were having a very public relationship with Anne Heche at this time. What was it like to go from one extreme to the other almost overnight?
It was weird. I mean, my life is just, you know, I was just thrilled that I had a career. I mean, it started as a stand-up and worked, you know, from playing little places that held 150 people. And, you know, there were really just about 50 people in there and or 40 weren't conscious because they were drunk. It was just, I really went through working my way up to get to a place where I actually got a television show. And I was so thrilled that I had a television show, and I was so thrilled that I had made it so far from New Orleans to be, you know, have a successful television show, that, you know, it just, you know, to come out was just kind of a thing that I just felt like I had to do. I really didn't realize what that would do to my career, to my my life, you know. It just, and like you said, you know, it was a very public time for me. And I think that, you know, if I could play my life as It's a Wonderful Life, and if I hadn't gotten involved and hadn't been in a relationship, I think it would be very, very different. I don't think it would have been so public. I think I just would have done the show and I would have kept doing the show. And but I think that was a really wild time for me. I want to be really careful about this too, because I want to say that as I talk about this, I haven't talked about it, and I want to be careful how I word it, because I want to say I take full responsibility for being a participant. But at the same time, as I have perspective on it, I was in a very vulnerable place, coming from a very fearful place, and I met a very fearless person who enjoys attention. And I was influenced, and I was like, you know, being told, what are you, crazy? You're going to be on the cover of Time magazine, and yet you're worried about, you know, going to a premiere and doing this and doing that. And I was like, yeah, you're right, you're right. And I just, you know, it's, and again, I take responsibility, but I think that my life was so huge and so public, and I was doing things because I felt like there was only the other extreme. You know, I wasn't paying attention to my gut feeling, which is, okay, I did this, and now let's just be quiet about it, and that's all I wanted to do. Because really, that was what my gut was.
What's an example of something that you wish you hadn't done that you feel in retrospect wasn't really you?
It's hard to pick out one specific thing, but I think that it's just the fact that I got so upset by the network shying away, or advertisers pulling, or everything, and I took it personally, and I think that was hard for me, and it all was too much for me. It really sent me into a downward spiral of, after I lost the show, especially, because that was my entire life. I had been doing that show for 5 years, and I loved doing that show, and suddenly I lost it, and it's really hard when you're used to going to work every single day, and as a performer, used to that release, that outlet, and suddenly it's just shut off from you. And not only is it shut off, there's nobody else knocking on the door. And not only that, but every time you even open a magazine or think about turning on, you know, I mean, I was even scared to open House and Garden or Architectural Digest. I was like, am I going to be in here? I mean, the weirdest things would happen to me. Like, you know, I'd be stopped at a red light, and this cop was next to me one day, and said, hey, how you doing? And I said, okay. And he goes, I just saw it. Where did I see you? Some magazine. I said, I don't know. And he goes, yeah, some magazine. And I'm just like, please don't say anything. And it's like I'm waiting for the light to turn green. And all of a sudden, he goes, anyway, they were making fun of your shirt. Have a nice day. And just pulls away. And I just thought, this is just cruel now. It's just plain cruel. He just thought that was, anyway, they were making fun of your shirt. Have a nice day. I was like, the light couldn't have turned green just 30 seconds earlier. He had to get that out. But it really was just, you know, a hard, hard time for me. And I just, you know, I just thought, you know, I just got hurt and angry and everything. And so...
Was there a period where you felt it's over, that period is over?
No, I felt like I kind of, I thought, okay, it had been, I guess, a year or so, and I just, that's when I started writing the special, the beginning, when I just thought, this is ridiculous. Okay, I'm not getting offered any jobs. I nobody's calling, but I'm a writer. That's how I got here. I'm funny, and I'm a writer. And I didn't just get lucky, and then I came out to make, you know, and that was hurtful, too. The people thought I was coming out to get attention or to, you know, for ratings. It's like, you know, look at all the people lined up, you know, that were doing it before me and after me, that because it's such a great thing for your career. So I just thought, I'll write a special. And then I was just thinking, well, what if no straight people ever like me again? I'm just going to be like, you know, this gay icon, and I'm not going to write gay material. Then the gay people are going to come see me and go, that's not gay material. She's not being gay enough. So I just thought, I'm just going to write a special, and hopefully once it airs, people will see that I'm the same person. It's, you know, all I ever wanted to do was, you know, be a funny person.
After you came out, your mother, Betty, became a gay rights activist. How did you come out to her?
I just told her that, you know, we were always really close, and I always felt like I could tell her anything. And I told her that that I was gay, and that and which it was a shock to her because I had had so many boyfriends all through high school, and you know, I was just boy crazy, and she just didn't understand it. She thought it was a phase, and she was fine. She was a little shocked, but she wasn't angry, and she didn't, you know, freak out or anything. And because there were no books and she didn't understand what to do with it, she went to the library and got some books and started trying to read about homosexuality and try to figure it out, which is great that she's written books now to help people, because there should be books to help parents when they find that out. But she was great.
Were you surprised that she was great, or did you expect her to be great?
I expected her to be great. My mom's, you know, I mean, she and I have been through a lot together, and when my mom and dad divorced, it was just my brother left. He was in a band, and they went touring, and it was just my mom and I from the time I was 13 on. And it's how I started doing comedy, because she went through a really hard time and dated some guys that were just some horrible, horrible men that treated her really badly. And she'd be crying sometimes, and I'd just start doing things to make her laugh, and she'd start laughing, and then I'd imitate her laughing, and then she would start laughing so hard she was crying, and then I would be laughing and crying with her. And I saw the power as a 13-year-old kid to take care of my mother, to change her mood, to make her happy when she was so unhappy. It was an amazing feeling, and I think that's the beginning of when I realized that I wanted to do that, because I could change people's moods and feelings. And I saw, you know, and I moved, you know, every 2 years we went, I went to a different school, so I had to start over everywhere. So I used humor to fit in everywhere I went. So,
In your stand-up act before you came out, you used to do a story that was based on a real story in your life, and it was the story of someone who you described, I think, as your roommate who died in a car crash, someone who you clearly cared really deeply about. You know, and in this set of stand-up comedy was this very moving, emotional moment. I assume that person was probably a lover, not just a roommate. Assuming that's true, was it ever difficult back then to tell that story and invest all this emotional weight in it, not be able to really tell why you were so emotional?
No, I did. It was actually, I wrote The Phone Call to God. Her name was Kat. She was my girlfriend, and we were living together at the time, and she was killed in a car accident. And it was, I was 20 years old, and it was my first realization that, you know, how precious life is. I think it was a beautiful gift, actually, to me, that I was able to learn that early on, to appreciate every single moment of life. Because you're never the same after you lose somebody that you love, and especially at that age, it just doesn't seem possible. And I actually saw the accident, and I didn't know it was her. I slowed down, and I could hear the sirens behind me, so they were just getting there, and I just kept going, and I didn't realize it was her until the next morning. And so I wrote this piece called The Phone Call to God, mm-hmm. because I went home and, you know, just was obviously depressed and trying to figure things out. And there were fleas all over this place that I was staying in. And I just thought, why are fleas here? Here's this beautiful, amazing 21-year-old girl just gone, and fleas are here. And what if we could just pick up the phone and call up God and ask God these things? And I just started writing. I'd never written comedy before. And I put, you know, the pen to the paper, and I wrote out what it would be like. I imagined that you'd have to, you know, hold the phone to your ear for a long time before God answers, because it's a huge place, so it would ring forever. And then I imagined finally saying, you know, yeah, hi, God. Sure, I'll hold on. Realizing God's very busy, and then be put on hold and listen to Onward Christian Soldiers, because that would be the hold music. And then say it's Ellen DeGeneres, and then, you know, God would make fun of my name. Sounds like degenerate. And then it would be this whole long thing about what it would be like to talk to God. And I finished writing. It just poured out of me. And I looked at it, and I thought, I'm going to do that on the Johnny Carson show. And I'm going to be the first woman ever to be called over to sit down on the first set, because no woman had ever been called over on the first time to sit down. That was the big thing for Johnny Carson, the motion to come sit down. And I was. I was the first and only woman in the history of the show to be called over because of the phone call to God. I did it. I think.
But that's the thing that's bizarre, because here you are talking about your lover.
Yeah.
And yet being totally closeted, but people like love what it is that you're saying about.
Sure. And it's, well, and it was a funny thing. They actually didn't know. When I was doing it on stage, I actually just said, I don't understand why certain things are here. You know, but it was, I think by that time, because it was like 7 years later that I did The Tonight Show or something like that. Yeah, I mean, it was hard also because I didn't really get to grieve or acknowledge how devastating that was for me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because now, you know, I mean, somebody loses their husband or their wife, and everybody's just, they know how hard it is. But when you lose your girlfriend, especially at 20 years old, it's just, oh, she's your friend, and that's a shame your friend died.
Terry spoke with comedian Ellen DeGeneres in 2002. She has a new stand-up special premiering on HBO next month.